Welcome to In the Moment. Good afternoon to you, or good morning to you. I'm Kara Hetland, and we are broadcasting from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Coming up next hour, and we're going to hear some tuning and some warming up, but we have the Black Hills Chamber Music Festival folks tuning up, and we will have an hour with them next hour. But first, we're going to have a fascinating conversation with Whitney and Jesse. Joining us, my computer is shutting down as we go. So Whitney and Jesse Rencounter are here and joining me in the studio. And thanks so much for coming in and being on In the Moment. I really appreciate it.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for having us.
So Whitney, let's start with you. You are Dakota Lakota. You have grown up on the Crow Creek Sioux Reservation and grew up in Fort Thompson. Talk a little bit about you and your life and how you ended up in Rapid City.
Sure, yes. Once again, good morning to everyone. My name is Whitney Rencounter II. Come from the Hunkpati Dakota Oyate, also known as the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe, right here in central South Dakota. And I grew up on the reservation, you know, all my life. Off and on, I would move to different towns throughout Rapid City as my mother kind of moved throughout. But for the most part, living on the Crow Creek Reservation. Growing up, I knew there was kind of some challenges that we've had from the reservation and border towns and kind of in South Dakota. You really don't understand why. But I think by growing up and going to college after high school, I went to Black Hill State University where I met my wife. It was then when I started to get kind of a bigger picture of what South Dakota truly is and the world for that matter. And so growing up, spending a lot of time with my grandparents really had a profound effect on myself. So I think now living in Rapid City, you know, for the better part of almost 20 years now in the Black Hills, I should say, I really have a different outlook on the lives that we live and maybe some ways and some things that we can do into the future to make our communities better, especially for our children. I think that's something we try to really push forward. So very excited to be here.
And Jesse, you are a counselor, an author, and a mother of four children living in Rapid City. So talk a little bit about your life and how you grew up and your early memories.
Okay, sure. I grew up actually on the Standing Rock Reservation all my life there. And I was blessed to be able to grow up with some of our culture, you know, our beautiful sacred ceremonies. And I've always heard my parents and my grandparents talk about the difficulty of having to live in two worlds as a Lakota person today. And I never really experienced that until I graduated high school and went off into college. And I knew exactly what they meant because I would be a college student there and then go back home to the reservation and, you know, participate in powwows or different ceremonies and such. And then go back to college and realize, oh my goodness, I know exactly what they were talking about living in two worlds. I fell in love with the Black Hills, not only because of the beauty, but because of the spiritual significance for people for thousands of years and that connectedness that we have here. So it's no more perfect place in the world than to live here in the Black Hills with our family.
And now you're raising your four children, still trying to keep them connected to two different worlds?
Yes, definitely. We do try to get back to the reservation as much as we can for different ceremonies and such. And we attend different powwows throughout the year. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, she just graduated from high school this past May, but she talked about that. And I never really explained to her that concept about living in two worlds. But when she would come back from a powwow, after a weekend, our family would come back into town and she would attend her high school classes the next day. She would be like, Mom, I feel so different. It's like I was in a different world. And so, yes, we do try to keep them involved in our culture and knowing that this is who we are, who we come from, but we can live in two worlds.
And she's going to go to Denver to college, yes?
Yes, this fall. She will be attending Denver University. So.
And how do you prepare her for that? I mean, because being in Rapid City and going to the reservation is kind of a less of a leap, perhaps, between two cultures than it would be moving to Denver?
Yes. Well, you know, our daughter's always been really independent growing up. But in fact, right now she's over attending a 3-week college prep course over in Wisconsin, Appleton, Wisconsin at Lawrence University. Mm-hmm. So we just spoke with her last night and she's like, I'm really getting excited for college. This is how it's going to be living in dorms and meeting people. And so I think it's mom that needs the preparation of letting go.
There's not a class for that, is there?
No, there's not.
And the first one is the hardest.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Whitney, let's talk a little bit about race relations and your work with race relations in Rapid City.
Yes. You know, for myself, it started 10 years ago when I became involved with the Te Api program, which we're just about to celebrate our 25th anniversary of the Te Api program in Rapid City. And the Te Api program is a kind of a cultural mentoring program that started out to really promote healthy fathers in the Lakota culture here in Rapid City, and kind of a big brothers, big sisters approach. But later on became more of a group mentoring, in our district. And so it was through this organization and program that we're helping Native American students, Lakota, Dakota, whatever background they come from, we're helping them to stay in school, the at-risk students that maybe need a little help and support to keep their eye on the prize of graduating high school. And so we start from fourth grade all the way to 12th grade with the Te Api programs, and really tutor them, mentor them. After school, we give them a snack and help them with schoolwork. And that for me was how I got involved. I said, you know what, if we're gonna help our students and encourage them to make changes in their lives, we also should do some things here in the community to get people to know a little more about the traditional Lakota Dakota culture. And because every culture has good and bad. But when you get to the basis of the good things of each culture and you combine those and you help people to work together. And so from there, I got involved with working with Karen Mortimer on the Miniluzaha Okola Kichiapi Ambassadors, the MOA group here. And with Visit Rapid City and Rapid City Collective Impact, and just being involved and being a voice to really kind of bridge cultures and help people to have conversations on what are some things we can do to build on and help each other in this community. And so that's kind of how, my passion to help people learn more about each other and bring the good things out of each culture to combine those to really benefit all students here in Rapid City. So that's kind of where the push for that came from.
So talk a little bit about your growing up and your grandfather made you sing.
Yeah. You know, I always think back to growing up on the reservation and in the Crow Creek homelands. And when I was a little boy, my grandfather, you know, he used to bring myself, and he had all daughters. But when he had grandsons, that's when he brought out his drum that he learned from his, you know, father and uncles and grandparents on how to sing at a powwow drum, or, you know, maybe singing prayer songs, or maybe the Lakota Dakota National Anthem and honoring songs. There's so many reasons that our songs live in our culture. But the songs are so significant that it's just the act of using your voice to bring change and to bring positive into our communities, and combining that with the dancers. So my grandfather, he used to sit us down and we would practice every day after school, or in the summer we would practice every day. And then on the weekends we would travel to all the reservation powwows throughout South Dakota. And I just remember thinking back, why do I have to sit here? As a little boy, I could be out playing football, or I could be out doing things with my friends, and sometimes my cousins would just kind of pick, or they wouldn't show up for practice, and they would make their choices to go do those things, which is okay as a young boy. But myself, I felt like I stuck it out, and I used to practice all the time with my grandfather. And then later on in life, you know, when I was asked to sing songs, and matter of fact, I was asked to travel to Suriname with Kevin Locke, the hoop dancer, and we sang for the president of Suriname in South America. And then also another time traveling to Italy with my family, traveling to Switzerland with my wife and sharing songs there. And then I thought back, I was like, now I'm so happy my grandfather sat me down to teach me these songs and to share with me some of the traditions that come from these songs. That, you know, it's almost like Mr. Miyagi and Karate Kid. You don't know why you're waxing on and waxing off, but it's for a reason. And I'm glad I'm able to be a song bearer for our people.
And now you know what's coming next, right? I'm going to ask you to sing.
All right. Okay. Yes. Well, so yeah, this morning I'll share, you know, one of the songs, you know, with the listeners this morning. My grandfather, he was a Korean War veteran. And, you know, back in those days, the American Indian Religious Freedoms Act was not passed yet. So at all our reservations, we could not have our celebrations, our powwows, our ceremonies yet legally. So we had to kind of on a sneak have these events, which brought nothing but honor and good things, but we were not ready yet in South Dakota or in America to really openly involve and have more inclusivity in our state. So this is a song that I'm going to share that was sung for my grandfather after he returned from boot camp and before he went to Korea, and my grandmother just wanted to make sure he was honored. So this is his song, and it talks about how he was called upon to serve and take courage to do that. My grandfather's Dakota name was Tatanka Naji, and Standing Buffalo. And, you know, so that song was sung for him and the other veterans down at Fort Thompson during that time. And, you know, and so my grandfather and I used to practice that every day. And so it's just to sing it and share it today with the listeners, just kind of a connection to what we have. So thanks for allowing me to share that song.
Thank you very much. Now, I'm wondering how you are you passing this on to your children?
Well, you know, I have all daughters, and our oldest, she loves to play the violin. Mm-hmm. And so together we recently recorded a CD where I sang, you know, some of the traditional songs, some of the songs that I composed, and maybe a few others that others. And then she played some violin kind of on top of the singing. So we kind of combined there. And so we'll be releasing that at some point, probably throughout this summer. And then our next oldest, she loves to sing. So she's kind of next up, I guess. I'm going to start teaching her those songs, some of the traditional songs, and then we'll work together. But we also, throughout the API program, teach our students. So there are a lot of students in Rapid City that we share and teach hand game songs and, you know, powwow songs and traditional songs. So, yes, definitely trying to share that and pass that on.
Okay. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about your book and some projects that you're working on as well. You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Kara Hetland, in today for Lori Walsh. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Kara Hetland. Lori Walsh is off today. Thanks so much for listening. Kevin Wooster's stopping by the studio in just a bit, and we also have music from the Black Hills Chamber Music Festival coming up in the next hour on In the Moment. But right now we're having a conversation with Whitney and Jesse Rencounter. And Jesse, you are an author and a school counselor and a celebrated children's author as well. So talk a little bit about the book that you wrote, and let's also, I don't know if you want to read segments from it or if you'd prefer to just tell the oral story that you're trying to tell.
Sure. I can read some segments because the oral version of it, the original version that I first start telling, it takes a little while. So, but, you know, this book came to me when I was serving as a school counselor. I was serving by myself, you know, and I think what a lot of people probably don't realize is that we need a lot of more school counselors in our schools. I feel like that part of a child's life is important, and I think the more school counselors we have, the better. But at that around that time, I was serving as one school counselor to 650 students at a Title I school, and so it was almost like mini crisis every day. I loved the children, I loved what I did with the students, but I wish there was more of me. And so sometimes I would have really late work days to try to get everything done. And there was one particular day I had a really difficult day. And my father, you know, when I was a young girl, always taught me about the beautiful significance of and spiritual significance of the Black Hills, and about how he said, you know, you're so lucky to live in the Black Hills. You can just go out and, you know, lay our traditional tobacco down and ask for guidance and help. And so I would do that on my difficult days. And I remember one time I had a really difficult day. I went and I laid my tobacco down and I asked for some help and some guidance. And I was struggling with wanting to help as many children as I could. I was given this beautiful dream. And in this dream, I had a message that came to me and was told to share this with the children, and as many children as I could. Next day, I went to work, and all of a sudden, you know, I was working with a couple little boys, kindergarten boys, who had so much energy. And I honestly don't know how to explain it, but I felt like this whole story, the plot and characters and everything, was just instantaneously downloaded into me. And I wanted to share with these little boys at the time, and shared it with them. I've never seen little boys that age sit still for that long. But so I started sharing more and more with students that came into my office, and all of a sudden I start getting phone calls and knocks at my office door from parents and grandparents saying, "Hey, you know, my student came home and they told me about this wonderful story that you told them. Where could we get that book so I can share it with their siblings?" And I said, "Well, it's actually not a book. I just kind of made it up." And so after about 4 years of having people check up on me and say, "Where's that book?" I finally just went ahead and published it. I got a little encouragement by submitting the story before I published it into a writing contest. And when I won this regional writing contest, I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe it's time.
Well, it's difficult to find, I will tell you that. So,
yes. So, you know, when students would come to me at the time, and I was working with K through 5 students at the time, they would have a lot of questions for me, asking, you know, "Mrs. Rencounter, why does certain things happen? Why does my mommy do this, or my big brother do this, or why is my daddy doing this?" And, you know, with all the training that we have as school counselors, there's only a certain extent that we can help them. And so I thought, you know, gosh, I want these little children to realize that what is going on with other people is not their fault, that, you know, that they are these loving, beautiful beings that have so much hope and have so much potential, that I don't want them to feel that what's going on around them with their loved ones is their fault. And so this story came to me, and I would share this with them, and some of the feedback that I would hear from parents and grandparents is just like, wow, you know, since they heard this story, they have become a lot happier. They're not as angry. So it really teaches about having compassion and having forgiveness, and also really letting them know why people around us do hurtful things. But this message came to me through that dream.
So the line that got me I was tearing up. Those with dim lights forgot they have lights.
Yeah.
So I would like you to set up the part of the story with just talking about those lights.
Yes. So I'm going to share, I guess, actually just that little experience mm-hmm. that I had in my dream that I ended up putting in the book. So I actually was in my dream in like outer space looking down at our world. And this older man was talking to me and telling me, he says, we're all born into this world with beautiful lights. He says, when we're babies, we come into this world with bright lights. People want to come around us. They want to be around us. And because we make them feel good. But sooner or later, sometimes people do things or they say things to us that make us forget mm-hmm. about how beautiful we are. And some people will have dim lights. Some people will have bright lights. And it's the people with dim lights, he says, you know, they're not bad people. He says, they're not. He says, they just forget how beautiful they are and where we come from. And so these people with these bright lights, they've been hurt as well too. But the only difference between these people with the bright lights and the dim lights is choice. They have that choice to remember where we come from. They have that choice to forgive others who have hurt them. And they have that choice to choose compassion, kindness, and love. It's the only difference that they have. And that we, you know, when we have these bright lights, and we all go through these stages where our own light dims and our own light shines bright. When we have bright lights, to always make sure that we're helping those around us. Because what he told me is that there's not one person in this world that can help everybody and help the whole world. But what we can do is we can help those around us. You know, and all it takes is, you know, simple gestures of kindness. Sometimes just a smile, sometimes just a hello can help someone. And so I wanted to take this message and turn it into a book. And in my book, I have characters in here that have situations that were similar to what my students were going through at the time. Where sometimes we have loved ones that suffer from addictions or loved ones that suffer from a lot of anger, and sometimes they take it out on us. Sometimes we have loved ones that leave us or like where we feel abandoned. And sometimes we take that on as our own. We feel like it's our fault, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think as young children, if we can realize that this is not because of us, that's because of their own hurts and their own struggles that they're going through, it helps us realize to stay beautiful, stay bright, and to be able to do our best yet.
And this is not just one culture.
No.
This is for all people.
Yes, yes, it is. You know, when I was a school counselor, I worked with students of many different cultures and backgrounds and such. And so I wanted to apply the overall message to all students. Although I did, my illustrator is actually my first cousin, and she wanted to make the little main character, a little boy, kind of resemble Native American children, which was great. But all the message overall is for everybody, you know. And what I've heard back from people is that, you know, this is not just for children. It's not just a K through 5 book. It's for grandparents as well, too. People of all ages, of all races and backgrounds and cultures.
Will you read something from it?
Yes, of course. So I always have, let's see. So I'll read a little bit about where this, okay, sure. Okay, so it says, Misu looked and saw people standing with bright lights in them while others crouched to the ground. I see some people with lights and some people who don't have any lights. Peta smiled. Are you sure? Look closer. Misu looked closer at the people who were kneeling and realized that they did have lights. They were just very dim and hard to see. Why do you think some have brighter lights and others are dimmer? Peta asked. Misu saw that those with dim lights were like Lucy and the kids who hurt Lucy. That's when everything made sense. Those with the dim lights forgot that they have lights, Misu said. They are sad, angry, lost, sick, and scared. "You are right, grandson," Peta said. "We are all born into the world with light so bright that when people are drawn to, us. Over the years, others hurt us with their words and actions, and we begin to forget how beautiful we are." It was like he had been given new eyes. Misu saw how so many people on Earth were hurting and how they acted out of their hurt. His eyes swelled with tears.
That is just such a beautiful message. Talk a little bit about unpacking that box of books the first time when you became published and what that meant to you.
Yeah, so there's a, I have to share very briefly a little bit about an experience I had when I was a first grader. When I was in first grade, we wrote stories, and my first grade teacher had put cardboard and put some wallpaper around it to make it look like a, it was a real book, and titled it and put our name by whoever. And I was so proud of it, and I was so excited. And my dad had a video camera. I wanted him to video camera me and hook it up to the TV. Well, in my six-year-old mind at the time, I thought when I was on TV on the video camera that the whole world was watching. And I was so excited. I thought, oh, people heard my story, you know. And so when my books came in for the first time, my husband did a live feed on his Facebook page. And I remember opening it up and just being flooded with these emotions of, first of all, being that little six-year-old girl again. Yes. And then also thinking, wow, this is actually happening. And I didn't think I was going to cry. And I ended up crying, being so happy. And just, I had goosebumps all over my body. And our daughters were there to experience that. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't know I was going to cry. But it was being me. It was being real.
And you knew this. You were setting her up, right, Whitney?
Yeah, well, just being along the ride and how difficult it was to see her sitting in front of the computer, going through this process of looking for a publisher, all the steps along the way. And so I was very happy for her when that time came.
Yeah. So you are working on a novel and another children's book. Can you give us a sneak peek at what's coming from you?
Sure. So, you know, one of the issues that a lot of, and it's not just children, but it can start as children, that we find is that we have a hard time sometimes accepting our physical self. And sometimes we get so stuck on our physical looks and such. And so what we forget is that first we are spirits having this body experience, this physical body experience. And so wanting to share this message with young children about, you know, it's our bodies are important, yes, but they're not us. They're not who we really are. They're our temple. They're our house for us to get through in this world, in this physical world. And so sharing a little bit about that and teaching children about the importance of loving themselves, every part of them, flaws and such. And then a novel is wanting to be able to address the importance of healing as women, because I think women are... we play important roles, you know, and sometimes we forget about who we are, but the importance of being able to heal who we are, because I think, you know, this comes down to carrying stuff in our DNA from our mothers and our grandmothers and so forth. And, you know, I had this beautiful experience again, somewhat like a dream, where this message and this whole story of this novel came to me, every single part of this. And when it came to me, I cried because I was like, oh my goodness, okay, this is my next, this is not a children's book, it's for women. But when I saw at the end, I saw women all over different colors reading this, and I was like, I need to write this. So yes, it's about being able to embrace being a woman and the sacredness of being a woman. So,
and it's for all women,
yes,
right?
It is, yeah. For all women. So it's going to be typically the setting and the characters are going to be Native American women.
Sure.
But the message behind it, you know, just kind of like my children's book, is going to be for all women of different cultures and backgrounds.
How is it to take that dream that this is the story I have to tell and really get the word count in there as writing it out or shortening it to make it so children understand? You have this vision, mm-hmm. and then how do you really put that on paper? It's got to be painful. It was painful for you, right, Whitney?
That was the most difficult part of this whole process. Coming up with the story, the plot, characters and stuff was really simple. It was actually, trying to put what's an oral version of the story into a book, you know, that could be read by, you know, in this case, this book that I have published already, that could be read by first graders, you know, five-year-olds, but also could be understood and read by fifth graders or, you know, sophomores in high school, the same message. It was difficult, you know, but I do a lot of things through prayer. And so I always just allow Creator to work his magic. And I say, I'm a vessel.
You just have to open yourself out to let the words flow, whether yes. you're thinking them or not.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Wow. And then, Whitney, how does this and these messages really translate for you and into what you're doing with race relations in Rapid City? Because I think these stories matter, right, for all of us.
No, absolutely. I think one of the things that I've learned along the way, you know, with my wife and I, to be honest, is, you know, growing up in a single-parent home, you know, one of my goals in life was to hopefully someday become a father that was help raise my children and work with my wife and develop, re-strengthen our families, you know. Mm-hmm. And I realized early on that that's not something that can go into other people's homes or communities and fix things, that I had to start with my own family. Mm-hmm. And so my wife and I, you know, we spend day in and day out, number one, you know, after we pray, our focus is our family first, and to take care of our children and love them and unconditionally. But the big part of that isn't necessarily just, you know, every day showing up and being there, but it's also to take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so for the past many years, I've really gone on this journey of self-healing and personal growth. And by going through that journey, I've learned to look at things objectively. I've learned to look at things around me in a different light than maybe growing up on the reservation, thinking that all people were this way or that group of people were that way. I had to challenge myself, and I started to realize that in the end that there's good and bad in every community. You know, so like my wife said, it's our choices. And so I think that really has motivated me to work with so many different people throughout this journey in Rapid City and throughout the state. To really help our communities and be that bridge to helping people work with one another, maybe working with people they're not used to working with, and being able to see other perspectives and appreciate. You don't have to change or believe in the way that other people think, but if you can learn to appreciate it, then I think we can be more inclusive and we can be better as a community and as a state.
Do you have another song that you would like to share?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have songs for, you know, everything. But I think, you know, at this time, we've had some challenges throughout. And one of the things that it seems to be going on is we're losing a lot of our traditional cultural bearers. And it seems like I've had an auntie mother who's been in the hospital in Sioux Falls for a while now. And the doctor said that she wasn't going to make it and got the family together. But somehow, some way, she made it, and she's still here. My wife, you know, both sides of our families, we've had some challenges. And so I'll sing an uplifting song to give encouragement and honor that we always like to share. So at this time. All Right, a little song to encourage those of you out there and really kind of uplift you. And that's what our songs and our music and our dances do, is they really uplift people, especially if you have a terminal illness or something going on. You know, these songs really kind of bring life back to those that listen.
Whitney and Jesse Rencounter, I want to thank you so much for taking time and coming on In the Moment today. I really appreciate you being here and sharing your story and your work with us. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We appreciate the opportunity.